Welcome to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast, a deep dive into biblical leadership with pastor and author, Dr. Gerald Brooks.
Hi, this is Gerald Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me for today's podcast. In just a moment, I'm going to be talking to you about the constants of leadership. The constants of leadership. But as I always do, I want to remind you of some upcoming events. On September 11th, I will be in Boston and be doing a strategic church growth conference. If you're a minister, let me just ask you these questions. Do you know the difference between planting a church? Do you know the difference between growing a church? Do you know the difference between sustaining a church? See, there's a lot of people that can plant a church, they cannot grow a church, and people who can grow a church who cannot sustain a church. Each one of those skills are different, but if you come to Boston, we'll walk you through those. Do you know the critical questions you need to ask the first 5 years of a church, the fifth through the 10th year of a church, and then the 10th through the 25th year? See, there are questions you have to ask, and these questions are different based on the years. So if you'll come to Boston, you will find out the answers to these. You can go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com and you can sign up. Also, on October 2nd, I will be in Canton, Ohio at a very dear friend of mine, Mike Caminetti's church. And I can tell you that this roundtable has been just outstanding across the nation. And when I say outstanding, we're dealing with the four seasons of a leader's life, what those look like, what those feel like, why people get stuck in one season and don't go to another. And then finally, I want to remind you of our leadership videos. If you want a way to train your team, train your interns, train your business leaders to help them understand Christian leadership, this is for you. Now, let me just be upfront with you. If you're looking for cheap, that's not going to happen here. I learned a long time ago from John Maxwell, he said, if leadership is affordable, it's not leadership. It always costs you something. But if you're interested in the videos, the Canton Roundtable, the Boston Strategic Church Growth, you can go to my webpage at GeraldBrooksMinistries.com and you can sign up. I want to talk to you today about the constants of leadership, the constants of leadership. I love leadership. I love seeing it. I love watching it. I love thinking it. I love learning it. I love leadership. Now, when I say that to you, a part of that love is because God gave me a love for it, because that's what he asked me to do, was to lead and to train leaders. Now, for me, the school of leadership is two things. It's history that I learn from, and it's the Bible that I read from. And so both of them are prolific in providing examples of leaders. So when I go in history, man, the number of leaders that I'm able to look at there is just massive. When I go into the Bible, the number of leaders that you see there is just so plentiful. And so these examples begin to feed my leadership journey. And these examples have led me to a conclusion, and that is that there are some constants in leadership. Now, let me take that word constant for those of you that are unaware what it means. When we say something's a constant, it just means it's the same. It's just repeated over and over again. So like a 7-day week, we know that it's a constant. There aren't some weeks that you get 7 days and other weeks you get 10 days and some weeks you get 12 days. It's 7 days. Everyone has a 7-day week. It's a constant. In math, they're numbers whose values do not change. And so in an equation, it could be the number 5, it could be the number 7. And what we know is that 5 is always going to mean 5 and 7 is always going to mean 7. And so they are constant. Well, in leadership, there are some constants. In fact, there are 3 of them. There are 3 constants that you keep running into. And it doesn't matter whether you study historical leadership, which is secular in nature, or biblical leadership, which is spiritual in nature, what you find is that there are 3 constants in leadership. Now, what I want to do is I want to walk you through the constants of leadership. I want you to see them. I want you to know how they're integrated together. I want you to know how they stand alone and as pieces. But I want you to see that they set the environment for leadership to happen. Now, the constants of leadership. The first constant is that there's a leader. If you're going to talk about the constants of leadership, the first known is that there's a leader. And so it's the leader, him or herself, and that is one of the constants in leadership. In history, in spiritual, it is the fact that there is a leader in that particular moment. It could be an evolving leader. It could be a proven leader. It could be a new leader. It could be an old leader. But there is a leader. That is one of the constants. So you just write down constants. When I study this, I always see a leader. Who is the leader? How are they leading? What are they leading? Where are they leading? And you begin to have that constant. The next thing is a follower. And a follower is just simply this, someone who's willing to be led. Someone who's willing to be led. So what we know is that the constants of leadership, first of all, a leader, someone who is going somewhere, and then there's a follower, someone who's willing to go somewhere with a leader. But then third, there is the context, the environment in which leadership will happen. And so there's a context in which that leader is leading, that follower is following. And when you put those two together, what you find is there's a context in which this is occurring. And if you want to understand leadership, you look at the leader, you begin to learn them. You look at the followers, what is motivating them. You look at the environment, the context that the leadership is happening, and it begins to unload for you what the leadership looks like. Now, these are the same. These three, a leader, a follower, a context. A leader, a follower, a context. They are the same whether you're studying natural leadership or, as I like to put it, historical leadership, or you're studying spiritual leadership. They are the same. You're always looking at the uniquenesses of a leader. You're looking at the heart of the followers, and you're looking at the circumstances in which these two, the uniqueness of a leader and the heart of the follower, begin to merge together. You're looking at the context when these begin to merge together. So let's take the deep dive here, the leader. Here's what I can tell you about leaders. They're motivated for action. They're motivated for action. Now, if it's a secular leader, that motivation tends to be ambition. They're ambitious. There's something they want to achieve. There's something that they want to accomplish. It could be personal. It could be global. It could be a product. It could be a development. But it is secular. It's usually about ambition. So when you look at secular leaders, they have an ambition, and that ambition compels them to action. Spiritually, it is about a calling. It is about something innate inside them that they feel is bigger than them, greater than them. It is King David, when we first see him run out and he sees Goliath and he says, "Is there not a cause?" It is the sense that there's a spiritual compelling force inside them. So here's the thing about a leader. A leader is motivated for action. If you want to find a leader, don't look for someone who's doing nothing. Look for someone who is doing something. Look for someone who is out there and they're engaged, because that's where leadership, it's found in the midst of activity. For secular leaders, it tends to be ambition. For spiritual leaders, it tends to be calling. So let me talk to you about a historical example of leadership. The historical example of leadership would be George Washington. Here was a man who learned a leadership journey, who learned how to lead. Now, here's the thing. What consumed him and compelled him to action was the best interest of his men. See, he had been given a job during the Revolutionary War, and that was to take a ragtag group of people and somehow turn them into an army. And in the midst of that, he fell in love with this organization, this army, this group of men. And he had an ambition to make sure that they were taken care of. He was their advocate. He was their voice. When people were indifferent towards them, he challenged them. He was motivated. And then his commitment to the nation, not only to fight a battle to free us from certain issues that had been there because of Britain, but to create a nation. Now, the interesting thing is that you see the culmination of this, and it's not when he's over the army, and it's not even when he is president. If you've ever gone to Constitution Hall in Philadelphia, they'll walk you through, and you'll see these rooms on your right and left where literally the Declaration of Independence was just put forth, and it was negotiated, and it was there. But here's the thing. If you keep walking out the back door over to your right, you see a patio, and that patio is where the president was sworn in. That's where Washington was sworn in twice. But the third time that he's up there, he's not to be sworn in. He's to watch another individual, John Adams, being sworn in. As he's being sworn in, one of the protocols of the president is, if the president stands, you stand. If the president sits, you sit. But the president is always the first in the room, the first out of the room. The president moves first. Well, they had only known one president, and that was George Washington. But after John Adams had taken the oath of office, here's what happened. No one moved. Everyone was waiting for George Washington to move. But he refused to move because now he's no longer president. He's no longer president, but what he's going to do is he's going to wait until John Adams moves. What historians will tell us was that that was the first transfer of power in 400 years of mankind's history that didn't happen with bloodshed. But they said it was not the swearing in. It was George Washington waiting until John Adams. See, Adams had the position, but he didn't have the honor. That honor was only Washington's to give away. And Washington gave away that honor by refusing to move. See, he was committed to the foundation of this nation, not just to him being president, but to the nation and the greater good. And so what we find is we find that there's leaders out there and they're compelled to action. Well, biblically, it would be Gideon. And Gideon had a calling that took him from hiding and took him from a no one and a nowhere place and turned him into a leader. But what compelled him to action? It was a calling. And what I'm saying is every leader, when you study leadership, there's something that compels them. Find out what that is, and you will learn so much about leadership. They also challenged the status quo. Secularly, that would have been Steve Jobs and Apple. You know, he was asked one time, what do people want? And he looked at the individual. He says, people don't know what they want. It's up to us to tell them. See, the status quo says people want certain things, but disruption says they don't know what they want. We're going to give them what they want. And then you had the cell phone, the portable cell phone. Well, on the other hand, biblically, it was Jethro, you know, Moses' father-in-law, who sees the status quo of him going morning to evening, counseling with people. And he walks in and he says, the thing that you're doing is not good. He's challenging the status quo. He's saying, this isn't right. He says, you're going to hurt yourself and you're going to hurt the people. And I say, said many times, whenever the leader hurts, the people will be hurt. And so you see them motivated for action. They challenge the status quo and they're good at their stuff. Here's the thing about a leader. A leader doesn't have to be the smartest person. They just need to be smart at what they do. See, sometimes we think that you have to be a part of Mensa to be able to lead. But that's about IQ. IQ is about intelligence. But there's something that's different in a leader. It's not their intelligence, it's their learning. If you could look at me 46 years ago and see where I started, what you would see is you would see a kid who knew nothing, a kid who had nothing, and there was no lane for them to get anything. But there was one thing that changed it, and that was my willingness to learn. My willingness to stay before God in prayer, in practice, in the Bible, and begin to learn. And see, what learning does is it doesn't change your intelligence. Learning changes your capacity. There are a lot of smart people who haven't grown their capacity since college. But see, a leader grows their capacity. And for some of you that are average like me, can I tell you something? You can grow your capacity. You can just have a heart inside you and you learn things and you have a passion for learning, and what you learn and how you learn just creates this context for you to grow in capacity. So when you look at a leader, they're motivated for action. They feel that they need to do something. They're challenging the status quo. What exists is not what's going to stay out there. They're going to go after the status quo, and they're going to be there, and they're going to challenge the status quo. And what's going to happen is this. They're not going to give in to what's always been. Well, this is the way we've always done it. A leader is going to challenge the status quo. But then it's not only that, but you find yourself that leaders are good at their stuff. They're not necessarily the smartest. They're just smart enough, and they have a learning capacity that grows their capacity. And then they have a sense of hope. See, leaders define the reality before them. They have a sense of hope, and no matter what the circumstances are, they create hope in the midst of it. It's Admiral James Stockdale. I've talked about him before. He was an individual who was a POW during the Vietnam War, and he was the highest ranking. And he had a term he described as realistic optimism. And he said the person who was most likely going to break down and not survive captivity was the person who came in and said, "We'll be out by Christmas. We'll be out by the first of the year. We'll be out by spring." And he would look at him and he said, "Stop that." He said, "There's two things you need to know. One, we'll be out. But two, we don't know when we're out." He said, "False deadlines crush people's hope. But when you're honest and you say, hey, we're getting out of here, we don't know when, but we're getting out," he says that's realistic optimism. And one of the things that we know about our God is that our God is the God of all hope. And so whether it's Abraham, he gave him hope when there was no hope. And that kind of hope is what leaders possess. They give people hope when people have no reason to hope. So in the constants of leadership, there's the leader. But then in the constants of leadership, there's the follower. And the quality of the follower determines how far they will go. So let me give you a historical illustration. The French Revolution and the American Revolution were at similar times in history. Both of them brought about the downfall of existing governmental systems. But the French didn't have a revolution that tended to last. They quickly, after the revolution, fell back into old habits and patterns. Where the American Revolution, it went on, and it went on to achieve levels of greatness that people never thought were possible. And so here's the thing. When they see the French Revolution and the American Revolution, the French people, they wanted a better government. And the way they saw it is this: some people are better than others. See, they were an aristocratic society. They believed there was royalty, and they believed that there was status and position. And some people were chosen at this level of life. Some people were chosen to be at this level of life, and still others were chosen. They saw distinctions in people. They wanted a better government for all distinctions, where the American Revolution said, we're all the same. It doesn't matter if you're the king or the president. You're no better than me. You're the same as me. See, the French Revolution had a limitation to it, and it was they were willing to accept that there were different statuses for different people. The American Revolution is we are all the same. It was a difference in the followers, and it's the reason that America went on to do some of the things that it did. But here's the thing about the follower. Leadership does not transcend followership. Now, I have to be honest with you, this lesson is a nuanced lesson, and it's deeper than some of the other lessons that I've given you. And if you're a high-capacity leader, you're getting that right now. But for some of you, you're going to have to dive in and study. See, leadership does not transcend followership. Someone says, well, what does that mean? Not everyone's going to follow you. It doesn't matter how good a leader you are. It doesn't matter if you're the best leader in the whole wide world. What we know is that Jesus could do no mighty work in his own hometown. We know that he was limited in leading in his own hometown because of how they responded to him. They said, isn't this Mary's son? They didn't let what they knew allow them to receive what he had. And so you have to understand that sometimes you're going to lead and people are going to follow you to different levels, to different degrees. But as a leader, you're not going to necessarily be in a situation where everyone's going to follow you to an extreme state. John Maxwell says one of the hardest lessons to learn is that when you're on the elevator and you're going up, how many people you know could go up further but get off at a floor lower than they should? Why? Because the follower determines how long they're willing to be led. See, leadership is a gift which all will not receive. But it's not that they will not receive it. Some will only receive it for a period of time. Others will receive it for a longer period of time. So in the constants of leadership, you have the nature of the leader, then you have the nature of the follower. And sometimes you have to look at both of those. Jeremiah, you are going to lead Israel, but you're going to preach, but they're never going to listen. It wasn't a leadership problem, it was a followership problem. That leads us to the context. Remember, in every leadership moment, there are constants. There's the leader, there's the follower, and then there's the context in which they merge together. And the first thing that I want to say to you is that leadership is not transferable. And if I could say anything to pastors, learn this principle. Leadership is not transferable. There are people who can lead at work, but they cannot lead at a church. They're not the same. In the same way, it would be foolish of me to think that because I've led a church for 46 years, that I in turn can turn around and lead in a Fortune 500 company. I'm a very prolific leader, and I can talk leadership and think leadership. And I know a lot about leadership in business, but I've never led a Fortune 500 company. And for me to think because I've led a church, I can lead a Fortune 500 would be foolish. But on the other hand, when a business person walks into your church and looks at you and says, I can lead, you've got to understand something. You've got to set the context. This is why I believe that our school of leadership at our church has been so profound. It's why I believe that the videos are so profound. You have people who have skills of leadership, but they don't understand the church. And if they tried to lead in a church, they would hurt it. And there's too many pastors out there who have leaders who have hurt the church because they said, I own this real estate company. I can teach you how to lead. I own this accounting company, this lawyer firm. I can teach you. They may have skills, but leading in a church is different. See, Churchill, he could lead during war, but he could not lead in peace. Michael Jordan, He was a rock star when it came to basketball. He was below average when it came to baseball. See, leaders tend to think they can lead everywhere, and they usually can't. Now, there are some crossover skills that if you're a highly effective leader that you have. One of those is adaptability. If you've led for a long time, you learned how to adjust. And that's a skill that will work in any arena. Adversity. If you have led for any length of time, you've learned adversity. But you've learned how to survive. And that is a skill. And then activity. In the midst of leadership, you've learned that just because you can do a lot of things, you only do what matters. The reason I gave you this message is, one, I love leadership and I love thinking it and I love participating in it. And I just wanted you to know what I look for. I look for the constants of leadership. Who's the leader? How do they lead? The followers? Why are they following? And then the context in which those two will merge. I just want to say to you that leaders are needed in the body of Christ. I want to encourage you, keep growing your leadership capacity, your leadership skills. And I would encourage some of you that feel like you're a high-ranking leader, you need to listen to this lesson a couple of times. The nuances of leadership in this are pretty pronounced. Hey, I want to remind you, September 11th, Boston, we will be doing strategic church growth. October 2nd, Canton, Ohio, we will be doing the four phases of a leader's life. And then we have our leadership videos. If you want to find out more about those, call our office and reach out to Cody, and he'll let you know what's involved. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast. If you'd like more information on Dr. Brooks's books, audio, or speaking engagements, please go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com.